Did you ever win a prize in a contest you never entered? Awesome. Well, it's the unfortunate experience for a large number of people on the Obama administration's terrorist watch list, on the list without any known affiliation with terrorist groups. So you ask, how did they get on the list in the first place? How did they win the prize? We'll solve that mystery, or try to anyway, in a moment. Also, Russian hackers hard at work score a cool billion or more new passwords and usernames. Thanks for that. A grim look at the front lines of the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, and a woman who grew up in the featureless landscape of Nebraska is pushing out the horizon of feminism. Basically, folks, there's your life before you knew who Roxane Gay was, and then after. Today, folks, is the first day of the rest of your life. Stay tuned. We begin with those watchmen at the White House and the watchman in chief.
The bottom line is that people around the world, regardless of their nationality, should know that the United States is not spying on ordinary people who don't threaten our national security.
Sure, you say that, Mr. President, back in January, but the latest data published by Glenn Greenwald's The Intercept claims the findings include a watch list of 680,000 men and women, many from the U.S., from Houston, New York, Dearborn, alongside 500,000 facial images and tens of thousands of iris scans. And 40% of those being monitored have no recognized terrorist group affiliation, according to the Intercept report. Joining me now is David Gomez, former senior assistant special agent in charge of the Seattle FBI office. Welcome, David.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
So what do you make of the breakdown of this watch list and its apparent proliferation of false positives?
Well, as I read the article that was written by Jeremy Scahill, whom I've known for a number of years, I think that it's a bit misleading in the sense that people don't understand that this is a worldwide list and the proliferation of numbers is based on a worldwide aggregation of people onto the list as opposed to just U.S. citizens, people from Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia. Those portions of the list have expanded because the government made an effort to identify members of these terrorist organizations and place them on the watch list, first of all, and then the no-fly list later on. But in terms of in the U.S., it's harder to get on the list, and it's probably easier to get off in these days because the FBI, at least in the United States, is making a concerted effort to review those cases and either modify them or delete them if they're not appropriate.
Look, David Gomez, I'm not a lawyer, but you know what you've just said falls a little bit short of what I would consider due process, you know?
Well, for a United States citizen, due process can take place in a court of law. I mean, you can certainly sue the FBI to remove you from the list to say that you have no affiliation. FBI headquarters maintains a system where you can appeal your placement on the list. But again, the FBI is running cases. It's not like the general list that people worldwide are being placed on the list and used for screening purposes, selective purposes, or no-fly purposes. In the FBI, if your name is on that list, it's because we have either an assessment or an investigation open against you. Whether that's appropriate or not is something that would be taken up by either the field office or headquarters when you make that appeal.
So the case of FBI names would relate to specific active cases. The broader list is just something of a database that the FBI would have access to.
Yeah, think of it as a giant research library for the United States intelligence community. A lot of the metrics that are on there are for the United States intelligence community and not just for the FBI. And I don't want to mislead anybody and say that everybody that is on that list has had an active case opened against them.
I guess I'm concerned that, you know, to describe this database as kind of a Library of Congress for the security agencies, I don't know if it's as benign as, say, a voter registration list, as it can really cast completely innocent Americans into a identity that they have no way of escaping from.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. I mean, if you look at the numbers that were published in the article and you look at the actual numbers of U.S. citizens and U.S. persons on the list compared to the total numbers, the article seems to stress the total numbers of 47,000 people on a no-fly list, when in fact there's only about 1,000 United States persons on that list. That's quite a bit of difference. When they talk about how many people are from the FBI during 2012, 2013, were nominated, they have the number 7,500 people, but what they don't really kind of stress is that 2,800 of those people were deletions. The FBI is making a lot of effort to remove people from the list because it's a resource issue for the FBI. Former Director Mueller emphasized that no terrorism lead would go uncovered, and that has put a lot of pressure on counterterrorism units within the FBI to resolve these cases quickly. So when a person comes from another agency nominated to the list and it comes to the FBI because that person is a U.S. citizen or a U.S. person, the FBI has to make a concerted effort, and we're under time constrictions legally to get that case resolved, to either say, yes, this person has some relationship to terrorism and we need to open either a preliminary investigation or a full investigation based on our own acquisition of knowledge about that person, or close the case and remove them from the list.
You know, it looks from the, you know, frequency of names on the list that the government considers Dearborn, Michigan, with so many Arab Americans, to be some kind of center of suspicion. Is that appropriate?
Well, it is one of those things that's, you know, is entirely appropriate because that's a center of population for people from the Middle East or from the Afghan-Pakistan region. If you were running the same kind of database and you were looking at suspected narcotics dealers, I think you'd see a predominance of names of people from the American Southwest because it borders Mexico and Central America. It's a transition point. So the data itself can be misleading in the sense that it's not because we specifically targeted Arab Americans, but that is a concentration where people who might be on the list from the Middle East, from the Afghan-Pakistan region, have settled.
So the Dearborn numbers don't smack of profiling?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, the data leads you to a certain point. So if all those people suddenly move to Los Angeles, then you might say, well, why is Los Angeles such a big deal? You know, the people concentrate where the people concentrate. You know, the data follows them. We don't try to influence the data.
In the investigations after 9/11, the notion was that data existed within the government that wasn't shared that could have stopped the terrorists at 9/11 because of watch lists that, you know, certain agencies didn't have access to. Would you say that this article is describing a fix to that system or a monster that's been created that maybe we should get the genie back into the bottle here?
I think the author's point of view is that it's a genie that has escaped the bottle and it's a problem that needs to be fixed. I'm not sure I agree with that idea in its totality. You know, for American citizens, there has to be a standard for American and U.S. persons, which is a kind of a subcategory of United States citizens. But for any person legally here in the United States, there has to be a standard by which we meet. And that standard, from my perspective, needs to be a little higher than reasonable suspicion. It causes an awful lot of work for U.S. law enforcement.
David Gomez is a former senior FBI special agent. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.